Money Trap Lane, Crybaby Alley, Scuttlebutt Court, the GBs, Pellicles Steps, he said. Tunnels everywhere. They were lucky to find it after only three or four. Mr. Rascal must have had lodgings in half the streets in the area, including Empirical Crescent.
But why? Said Sir Reynold Stitch. I mean, why dig tunnels everywhere?
Tell him, Carrot, said Vimes, drawing a line across the city. Carrot cleared his throat.
Because they were dwarfs, sir, and deep downers at that, he said. It wouldn't occur to them not to dig, and mostly it'd be just a matter of clearing out buried rooms in any case. That's a stroll to a dwarf, and they were laying rails, so they could take the spoil out anywhere they wanted.
Yes, but surely, Sir Reynold began.
They were listening out for something talking at the bottom of an old well, said Vimes, still bending over the map. What chance that'd still be visible? And people can get a bit iffy when a bunch of dwarfs turn up and start digging holes in the garden.
It'll be very slow, surely.
Well, yes, sir, but it would be in the dark, under their control and secret, said Carrot. They could go anywhere they wanted. They could zigzag around if they weren't certain. They could home in with their listening tube, and they'd never have to speak to a human or see daylight. Dark, controllable, and secret.
Deep downers, in a nutshell, said Vimes.
This is very exciting, said Sir Reynold.
And they dug into my museum.
Over to you, Fred, said Vimes, carefully drawing a line across the map.
Right, said Fred Colon. Nobby and me found out where only a couple of hours ago, he said,
thinking it wisest not to add after Mr. Vimes yelled at us and made us tell him every last detail and then sent us back and told us what to look for. What he did add was,
they were pretty clever, sir. The mortar even looked dirty. I bet you're saying to yourself, aha, sir.
I am, said Sir Reynold, bewildered.
I would normally say, my goodness. I expect you're saying to yourself, aha, how were they able to build up the wall again after they'd got the Muriel out, sir? And we reckon...
Well, I imagine one dwarf stayed behind to make good lay low, as you would say, and wandered out in the morning, said Sir Reynold. There were people going in and out all the time. We were looking for a big painting, after all, not a person.
Yes, sir, we reckon one dwarf stayed behind to make good lay low and wandered out in the morning. There were people going in and out all the time. You were looking for a big painting, after all, not a person, said Fred Colon.
He'd been very pleased to come up with that theory, so he was going to say it out loud, no matter what. Vimes tapped the map.
And here, Sir Reynold, is where a troll called Brick fell through a cellar floor into their tunnel, he said. He also told us he saw something in the main mine which sounds very much like the rascal.
But alas, you have not found it, said Sir Reynold.
I'm sorry, sir, it's probably long gone out of the city.
But why? Said the curator. They could have studied it in the museum. We're very interactive these days.
Interactive, said Vimes. What do you mean?
Well, people can look at the pictures as much as they want, said Sir Reynold.
He sounded a little annoyed. People shouldn't ask that kind of question.
And the pictures do what exactly? Hang there, Commander, said Sir Reynold.
Of course.
So what you mean is... People can come and look at the pictures, and the pictures, for their part, are looked at.
Rather like that, yes, said the curator.
He thought for a moment, aware that this probably wasn't sufficient, and added,
But dynamically. You mean the people are moved by the pictures, sir, said Carrot.
Yes, said Sir Reynold with huge relief.
Well done. That's just what happens. And we've had the rascal on public display for years. We even had a step ladder in case people want to examine the mountains. Sometimes people come in with a bee in their bonnet that one of the warriors is pointing to some barely visible cave or something. Frankly, if there was some secret, I would have found it by now. There was no point to the theft.
Unless someone had found the secret and didn't want anyone else to find it, said Vimes.
That would be rather a coincidence, wouldn't it, Commander? It's not that anything has just changed recently. Mr. Rascal didn't turn up and paint another mountain, and, although I hate to say this, just destroying the painting would have been enough.
Vimes walked around the table. All the bits, he thought. I must have all the bits by now. Let's start with this legend of a dwarf turning up, nearly dead, weeks after the battle, babbling about treasure. All right. Then it might have been this talking cube thing, Vimes thought. He survived the battle, hid out somewhere, and he's got this thing, and it's important. He's got to get it somewhere safe. No, maybe he's got to get people to listen to it. And, of course, he doesn't take it with him, because there's still likely to be trolls wandering the area, and right now they'll be in a mood to club first and try to think up some questions later. He needs some bodyguards. He gets as far as some humans, but when he's leading them back to the place where it's hidden, he finally dies. Forward 2,000 years. Would a cube last that long? Hell, they bob up in molten lava. So, it's lying there. Methodia Rascal comes along looking for a nice view or something, and he looks down, and there it is. Well, I have to accept that he did, because he found it and got it talking, who knows how. But he couldn't stop it. He drops it down the well. The dwarfs find it. They listen to the box, but hate what they hear. They hate it so much that Ham Crusher has 4 miners killed just because they heard it too. So why the painting? It shows what the box is talking about, where the box is. If you've got the box in your hand, isn't that it? Anyway, whose was the voice doing the speaking? It could be anybody. Why would you believe what it said? He was aware of Sir Reynold talking to Carrot.
Said your Sergeant Colon here, the painting is set several miles from where the actual battle was fought. It's in entirely the wrong part of Cwm Vallyr. That's just about the one thing both sides are agreed on.
So why did he set it there? Said Vimes, staring at the table as if hoping to draw a clue from it by willpower alone.
Who knows? It's all Cwm Vallyr. There are about 250 square miles of the place. I imagine he just chose somewhere that looked dramatic.
Would you chaps like a cup of tea? Said Lady Sybil from the door. I felt it a bit of a loose end, so I made a pot. And you should be getting your head down, Sam. Sam Vimes looked panicky, a figure of authority caught once again in a domestic situation.
Oh, Lady Sybil, they took the rascal, said Sir Reynold. I know it belonged to your family.
My grandfather said it was just a damn nuisance, said Sybil. He used to let me unroll it on the floor of the ballroom. I used to name all the dwarfs. We looked for the secret, because he said there was a hidden treasure, and the painting showed you where it was. Of course, we never found it, but it kept me quiet on rainy afternoons.
Oh, it wasn't great art, said Sir Reynold, and the man was quite mad, of course, but somehow it spoke to people.
I wish it'd say something to me, said Vimes. You really don't need to make tea for people, dear. One of the officers...
Nonsense! We must be hospitable, said Sybil.
Of course. People tried to copy it, said the curator, accepting a cup. Oh, dear, they were terrible. A painting 50 feet long and 10 feet deep is really quite impossible to copy with any kind of accuracy.
Not if you lay it out on the ballroom floor and get a man to make you a pantograph, said Sybil, pouring tea. This teapot is really a disgrace, Sam. Worse than the urn. Doesn't anyone ever clean it out? She looked up at their faces. Did I say something wrong? She said.
You made a copy of the rascal, said Sir Reynold.
Oh, yes. The whole thing, on a scale of 1 to 5, said Sybil, when I was 14. It was a school project. We were doing dwarf history, you see, and, well, since we owned that painting, it was too good to miss. You know what a pantograph is, don't you? It's a very simple way of making larger or smaller copies of a painting using geometry, some wooden levers, and a sharp pencil. Actually, I did it as 5 panels 10 feet square, that's full size, to make sure I got all the detail, and then I did the 1/5 scale version to display it, as poor Mr. Rascal wanted it displayed. I got full marks from Miss Turpitude. She was our math teacher, you know. She wore her hair in a bun with a pair of compasses and a ruler stuck in it. She used to say that a girl who knew how to use a set square and protractor would go a long way in life.
"What a shame you no longer have it," said Sir Reynold.
"Why should you say that, Sir Reynold?" said Sybil. "I'm sure I've still got it somewhere. I had it hanging up from the ceiling of my room for some time. Let me think. Did we take it with us when we moved? I'm sure—" She looked up brightly. "Ah, yes. Have you ever been up to the attics here, Sam?"
"No," said Vimes. "Now's the time, then."
"I've never been on a girl's night out before," said Cheery, as they walked a little uncertainly through the night-time city. "Was that last bit supposed to happen?"
"What bit was that?" said Sally.
"The bit where the bar was set on fire."
"Not usually," said Angua.
"'I've never seen men fight over a woman before,' Chiri went on. "'Yeah, that was something, wasn't it?' said Sally. "'They'd dropped Tawny off at her home. "'She'd been in quite a thoughtful frame of mind.' "'And all she did was smile at a man,' said Chiri. "'Yes,' said Angua. "'She was trying to concentrate on walking. "'It'd be a bit of a shame for Nobby if she lets that go to her head, though,' said Chiri.
"'Save me from talkative drucks, drinks, drunks,' Angua thought. "'She said,
"'Yes, but what about Miss Pushfram? "'She's thrown some quite expensive fish at Nobby over the years. "'We've struck a blow for our womanhood,' Sally declared loudly. "'Shoes, men, coffins, never accept the first one you see.' "'Oh, shoes,' said Chiri. "'I can talk about shoes. "'Has anyone seen the new Jan Rockhammer solid copper slingbacks?'
"'We don't go to a metal worker for our footwear, dear,' said Sally. I think I'm going to be sick.'
"'Sirs, you're right for drinking vine,' said Angua maliciously.
"'Oh, ha-ha,' said the vampire from the shadows. "'I'm perfectly fine with sarcastic paws, vine, thank you. "'What I shouldn't have drunk was sticky drinks with names "'made up by people with less sense of humour than... "'Oh, excuse me, oh, no.'
"'You're all right,' said Chiri. "'I've just thrown up a small hilarious paper umbrella.'
"'Oh, dear.'
"'And a sparkler.'
"'Is that you, Sergeant Angua?'
said a voice in the gloom. A lantern was opened and lit the approaching face of Constable Visit. As he approached, she could just make out the thick wad of pamphlets under his other arm.
"'Hello, Washpot,' she said. "'What's up?'
"'Looks like a twist of lemon,' said a damp voice from the shadows. "'Mr. Vimes sent me to search the dens of iniquity and low places of sin for you,' said Visit.
"'And the literature?' said Angua. "'By the way, the words nothing personal could have so easily been added to that last sentence.
"'Since I was having to tour the temples of vice, Sergeant, "'I thought I could do alms holy work at the same time,' said Visit, "'whose indefatigable evangelical zeal triumphed over all adversity. "'They say there's one in every police station. "'Constable, visit the ungodly with explanatory pamphlets was enough for two. Sometimes whole bars full of people would lie down on the floor with the lights out when they heard he was coming down the street. There were sounds of retching from the darkness.
"'Woe unto those who abuseth the vine,' said Constable Visit. He caught the expression on Angua's face and added, "'No offence meant.'
"'We've been through all that,' moaned Sally.
"'What does he want, Washpot?' said Angua.
"'It's about Coombe Valley again. He wants you back at the yard.'
"'But we were stood down,' Sally complained.
"'Sorry,' said Visit cheerfully. "'I reckon you've been stood up again.'
"'The story of my life,' said Chiri.
"'Oh, well, I suppose we'd better go,' said Angua, trying to disguise her relief.
"'When I say that the story of my life, obviously I don't mean the whole story,'
mumbled Chiri, apparently to herself, as she trailed behind them into a world blessedly without fun. The Ramkins never threw anything away. There was something worrying about their attics, and it wasn't just that they had a faint aroma of long-dead pigeons. The Ramkins labelled things. Vimes had been into the big attics in Schoon Avenue to fetch down the rocking horse and the cot, and a whole box of elderly but much-loved soft toys smelling of mothballs. Nothing that might ever be useful again was thrown away. It was carefully labelled and put in the attic. Brushing aside cobwebs with one hand and holding up a lantern with the other, Sybil led the way past boxes of men's boots various, risible puppets, string and glove, model theatre and scenery. Maybe that was their reason for their wealth. They had bought things that were built to last, and now they seldom had to buy anything at all. Except food, of course. And even then Vimes would not have been surprised to see boxes labelled apple cores various or leftovers need eating up. That was a phrase of Sybil's that got to him. She'd announce at lunch, "'We must have the pork tonight. It needs eating up.' Vimes never had an actual problem with this, because he'd been raised to eat what was put in front of him, and to do it quickly, too, before someone else snatched it away. He was just puzzled at the suggestion that he was there to do the food a favour.
"'Ah, here we are,'
said Sybil, lifting aside a bundle of fencing foils and lacrosse sticks. She pulled a long, thick tube out into the light.
"'I didn't colour it in, of course,' she said, as it was manhandled back to the stairs. "'That would have taken forever.'
Getting the heavy bundle down to the canteen took some effort and a certain amount of shoving, but eventually it was lifted onto the table and the crackling scroll removed. While Sir Reynold unrolled the big 10-foot squares and enthused, Vimes pulled out the small-scale copy that Sybil had created. It was just small enough to fit on the table. He weighed down one end with a crusted mug and put a salt cellar on the other. Methodia's notes made sad reading. Difficult reading, too, because a lot of them were half-burned, and in any case Rascal's handwriting was what might have been achieved by a spider on a trampoline during an earthquake. The man was clearly as mad as a spoon, writing notes that he wanted to keep secret from the chicken. Sometimes he'd stop writing in mid-note if he thought the chicken was watching. Apparently he was a very sad sight to see until he picked up a brush, whereupon he would work quite quietly and with a strange glow to his features. And that was his life. One huge oblong of canvas, Methodia Rascal, born, painted famous picture, thought he was a chicken, died. Given that the man couldn't touch bottom with a long stick, how could you make sense out of anything he wrote? The only note that seemed concise, if horrible, was the one generally accepted as his last, since it was found under his slumped body. It read, "Ork, ork, it comes, it comes." He'd choked on a throatful of feathers, and on the canvas the last of the paint was still drying. Vimes's eye was caught by the message numbered arbitrarily number 39. "I thought it was a guiding omen, but it screams in the night." An omen of what? And what about number 143? "The dark, in the dark, like a star in chains." Vimes had made a note of that one. He'd made a note of many others, too, but the worst thing about them, or the best, if you were keen on mysteries, was that they could mean anything. You could pick your own theory. The man was half-starved and in mortal dread of a chicken that lived in his head. You might as well try to make sense of raindrops. Vimes pushed them aside and stared at the careful pencil drawing. Even at this size it was confusing. Up front, faces were so large that you could see the paws on a dwarf's nose. In the distance, Sybil had meticulously copied figures that were a quarter of an inch high. Axes and clubs were being waved, spears were being pointed, there were charges and countercharges, and single combats. Across the whole length of the picture, dwarfs and trolls were locked in ferocious battle, hacking and smashing. He thought, "Who's missing?" "Sir Reynold, could you help me?" he said quietly, lest the nascent thought turn tail and run.
"Yes, Commander," said the curator, hurrying over. "Doesn't Lady Sybil do the most exquisite?"
"She's very good, yes," said Vimes.
"Tell me, how did Rascal know all this stuff?"
"There were many dwarf songs about it, and some troll stories. Oh, and some humans witnessed it."
"So Rascal could have read about it?"
"Oh, yes. Apart from the fact that he put in the wrong part of the valley, he'd got it down quite accurately."
Vimes didn't take his gaze off the paper battle. "Does anyone know why he put it in the wrong place, then?" he said.
"There are several theories. One is that he was deceived by the stories that the dead dwarfs were cremated at that end of the valley. But after the storm, that was where many of the bodies ended up. There was also a great deal of dead wood for bonfires. But I believe he chose that end because the view is so much better. The mountains are so dramatic."
Vimes sat down, staring at the sketch, willing it to yield its secret. "Everyone will know the secret in a few weeks," Mr. Scheinert said. "Why?"
"Sir Reynold, was anything going to happen to the painting in the next couple of weeks?" he said.
"Oh, yes," said the curator. "We would have installed it in his new room."
"Anything special about that?"
"I did tell your sergeant, Commander," said the curator a little reproachfully. "It is circular. Rascal always intended it to be seen in a round, as it were, so that a viewer could be there."
"And I'm nearly there too," Vimes thought. "I think the cube told the dwarf something about Coombe Valley," he said, in a faraway voice, because he felt as though he was already in the valley. "It told them that the place where it was found was important. Even Rascal thought it was important. They needed a map, and Rascal painted one, even if he didn't know it. Fred?"
"Yes, sir."
"The dwarfs weren't bothered about damaging the bottom of the painting,
because it doesn't contain anything important. It's just people. People move around.
But, with respect, Commander, so do all those builders, said Sir Reynold.
They don't matter. No matter how much the valley has changed, this picture will work, said Vimes. The glow of understanding lit his brain.
But even the rivers moved over the years, and any amount of boulders have rolled down from the mountains, said Sir Reynold. I'm told the area looks nothing like that now.
Even so, said Vimes in the same dreamy voice, this map will work for thousands of years. It doesn't mark a rock or a hollow or a cave. It just marks a spot. I can pinpoint it. That is, if I had a pin.
I have one, Sir Reynold said triumphantly, reaching to his lapel. I spotted it in the street yesterday. And of course, we all know the old saying, see a pin and pick it up, and all day long...
Yes, thank you, said Vimes, taking it. He walked to the end of the table and picked up one end of the painting, and dragged it back down the length of the table, the heavy paper flapping after him. He pinned the two ends together, held up the circle he had made, and lowered it over his head.
The truth is in the mountains, he said. For years you've been looking at a line of mountains. It's really a circle of mountains.
But I knew that, said Sir Reynold.
In a way, sir, but you probably didn't understand it until now, yes?
Well, yes, but it was a cave, Commander. He specifically mentions a cave. That's why people have searched along the valley walls. The painting's set right in the middle near the river.
Then there's something we still don't know, said Vimes. I'll find out what it is when I get there.
There, he'd said it. But he'd known that he was going to go, known for... how long? It seemed like forever. But had it seemed like forever yesterday? This afternoon? He could see the place in his mind's eye. Vimes at Coombe Valley. He could practically taste the air. He could hear the roaring of the river, which ran as cold as ice.
Sam, Sybil began.
No, this has got to be sorted out, Vimes said quickly. I don't care about the stupid secret. Those deep-downers murdered our dwarfs, remember? They think the painting is a map they can use, and that's why they're going there. I've got to go after them.
Look, Sam, if... Sybil tried.
We can't afford a war between the trolls and the dwarfs, dear. That business the other night was just a dumb gang fight. A real war in Ankh-Morpork would wreck the place. And somehow it's all tied up with this.
I agree. I want to come too, Sybil screamed.
Besides, I'll be perfectly safe if...
What?
Vimes gaped at his wife while his mental gears ripped into reverse.
No, it's too dangerous.
Sam Vimes, I've dreamed of visiting Coombe Valley all my life, so don't you think for one moment you're gallivanting off to see it and leave me at home.
I don't gallivant. I've never gallivanted. I don't know how to vant. I don't even have a galley.
But there's going to be a war there soon.
Then I shall tell them we're not involved, said Sybil calmly.
That won't work.
Then it won't work in Ankh-Morpork either, said Sybil, with the air of some player cunningly knocking out four dwarfs in one go.
Sam, you know you're going to lose this. There's no point in arguing. Besides, I speak dwarfish. We'll take young Sam, too.
No!
So that's all sorted, then, said Sybil, apparently struck by sudden deafness. If you want to catch up with the dwarfs, I suggest we leave as soon as possible.
Sir Reynold turned to her with his mouth open. But, Lady Sybil, armies are already massing there. That's no place for a lady, eh?
Vimes winced. Sybil had made up her mind. This was going to be like watching that dwarf being flamed by dragons all over again. Lady Sybil's bosom, which she was allowed to have, expanded as she took a deep breath. It seemed to lift her slightly off the ground.
Sir Reynold, she said, with a side order of ice. In the year of the lice, my great-grandmother once cooked, personally, a full dinner for 18 in a military redoubt that was entirely surrounded by bloodthirsty Clatchians. And she felt able to include sorbet and nuts. My grandmother, in the year of the Quiet Monkey, defended our embassy in Pseudopolis against a mob with no assistance but that offered by a gardener, a trained parrot, and a pan of hot cooking fat. My late aunt, when our coach was once held up at Bow Point by two desperate highwaymen, gave them such a talking to that they actually ran away crying for their mothers, Sir Reynold, their mothers. We are no strangers to danger, Sir Reynold. May I also remind you that quite probably half the dwarfs who fought at Coombe Valley were ladies. No one told them to stay at home.
So, that's settled then, thought Vimes. We...
damn.
Captain, he said, send someone to find that dwarf Greg Bashfulsome, will you?
Tell him Commander Vimes presents his compliments and will be leaving first thing in the morning.
Right, sir, will do, said Carrot.
How did he know I'd be going, Vimes wondered. I suppose it was inevitable. But he could have hung us out to dry if he'd said we'd mistreated that dwarf. And he's one of Mr. Shine's pupils, I'll bet on it. Good idea to keep an eye on him, perhaps.
When did Lord Vetinari sleep? Presumably the man must get his head down at some point, Vimes had reasoned. Everyone slept. Catnaps could get you by for a while, but sooner or later you need a solid 8 hours, right? It was almost midnight, and there was Vetinari at his desk, fresh as a daisy and chilly as morning dew.
I really do need you here, Vimes.
Carrot can look after things. They've quietened down anyway. I think most of the serious troublemakers have headed for Coombe Valley.
A good reason, one might say, of you not to go, Vimes. I have agents for this sort of thing.
More murder in the dark, you mean? Said Vimes.
No, sir. This is a straightforward police matter.
Not murder, Vimes, not murder, said Vetinari.
One could call it an acceptable level of nemesis.
Call it what you like, sir. I don't like it. I intend to bring the suspects back alive. It's a thing we try to do in the watch.
No, Vimes. This is a matter for the Low King. I shall send him a clax directly.
He has agents too, does he? Said Vimes sourly.
Indeed. Even in this city.
Just as I have in his. That is called politics, Vimes. It is a thing we try to do in the government.
Agents here spying on us? I thought we were chums with the Low King.
Of course we are. And the more we know about each other, the friendlier we shall remain. We'd hardly bother to spy on our enemies. What would be the point?
If you don't let me take a squad to Coombe Valley, Vimes growled.
Yes.
What will you do? Said Vetinari.
Sybil will come and ask you.
Vetinari gazed at Vimes in silent wonder.
Lady Sybil is letting you go, he said.
She's coming with me. So are Fred and Nobby. And I want to take Angua, Sally, Detritus, and Cheery. Multi-species, sir, that always helps.
And the summoning dark? What about that, Vimes?
Oh, don't look at me like that. It's common talk among the dwarfs. One of the dying dwarfs put a curse on everyone who is in the mine, I'm told.
I wouldn't know about that, sir, said Vimes, resorting to the wooden expression that so often saw him through.
It's mystic. We don't do mystic in the watch.
It's not a joke, Vimes. It's very old magic, I understand. So old, indeed, that most dwarfs have forgotten that it is magic. And it's powerful. It will be tracking them.
I'll just look out for a big floaty eye with a tail, then, shall I? Said Vimes. That should make it easy.
Vimes, I know you must be aware that the symbol is not the thing itself, said the patrician.
Yes, sir, I know. But magic has no place in coppering. We don't use it to find culprits. We don't use it to get confessions.
Because you can't trust the bloody stuff, sir. It's got a mind of its own. If there's a curse chasing these bastards, well, that's its business. But if I reach them first, sir, then they'll be my prisoners, and it'll have to get past me.
Vimes, Arch-Chancellor Ridcully tells me he believes it may be a quasi-demonic entity that is untold millions of years old.
I've said my piece, sir, said Vimes, staring at a point just above Lord Vetinari's head. And it is my duty to catch up with these people. I believe they may be able to help me with my inquiries.
But you have no evidence, Vimes, and you are going to need very solid evidence.
Right. So I want to bring them back here, eyeballs on a string or not. Them and their damn guards, so's I can inquire. Someone will tell me something.
And it'll also be to your personal satisfaction, said Vetinari sharply.
Is this a trick question, sir?
Well done, said Vetinari softly. Lady Sybil is a remarkable woman, Vimes.
Yes, sir, she is.
Vimes left.
After a while, Vetinari's chief clerk, Drumknot, entered the room on velvet feet and placed a cup of tea in front of Vetinari.
Thank you, Drumknot. You were listening?
Yes, sir. The commander seemed very forthright.
They invaded his home, Drumknot.
Quite, sir.
Vetinari leaned back and stared at the ceiling.
Tell me, Drumknot, are you a betting man at all?
I have been known to have the occasional little flutter, sir.
Given, then, a contest between an invisible and very powerful quasi-demonic thing of pure vengeance on the one hand, and the commander on the other, where would you wager, say, $1?
I wouldn't, sir. That looks like one that would go to the judges.
Yes, said Vetinari,
staring thoughtfully at the closed door. "Yes, indeed." "I don't use magic," thought Vimes, walking through the rain toward Unseen University. "But sometimes I tell